From WNYC, this is The Sporkful. It's not for foodies, it's for eaters. I'm Dan Pashman. And we've got another huge live show to announce. This one's going to be at the Bell House in Brooklyn. The great John Hodgman and I have a long-standing feud over the question of whether or not hot dogs are sandwiches. I say they are sandwiches, he says they're not. We're going to go head-to-head, live on stage at the Bell House in a debate moderated by WNYC's Brooke Gladstone, host of On the Media. I'm so excited that Brooke is taking part in this. It's going to take it to a whole other level. And that's not all that's going to be going on that night. I'll tell you more about it at the end of this episode. But it's Tuesday, November 10th. Tickets are on sale right now. Go get them at thebellhouseny.com. Now, let's get to the phones. Hi, who's this?
Hi, this is Matt calling from Dayton, Ohio.
Hey, Matt. What would you like to talk about today?
Well, I'm wanting to talk about the humble pancake. And when I was a kid growing up, my younger brother, used to sit around the breakfast table on Saturday morning when we had pancakes, and my mom would make great pancakes, and I would, like a normal kid, put butter and syrup on the pancakes. And my brother would put butter, peanut butter, applesauce, jam, syrup, and fruit, sometimes all at the same time, on his pancake. And I always thought, where do you draw the line? I mean, when does this no longer become a pancake? I mean, it's a shame that the ancient pancake is treated with such disregard.
When you were kids and your brother was doing this with the pancakes and putting so much stuff on top, did you ever challenge him on it then? Was this ever a point of discussion or tension?
Oh, absolutely.
And what would he say in response?
Well, he would say that he likes the variety.
What does your brother say about pancakes now?
I mean, I think he has, like me, fond memories of his days growing up and eating pancakes, but he hasn't moved from his position of dumping everything on top of one.
So you're more your approach to pancakes is a little more minimalist, traditionalist.
Right.
His approach a little more outlandish, a little more of an individualist.
Right.
Do you see those approaches manifested in your personalities today in other ways?
Maybe you're really getting to the heart of it here. I do to some degree. I mean, my brother's always been this individualist. I mean, he does his own thing. He does it in his own way. And so, yeah, you may be right about that. I mean, during college, he lived in a cabin in Montana, which none of us did. And so that type of individualist spirit, maybe that did carry over into his love for pancakes.
He wasn't writing any manifestos up there, was he?
Not that I know of. But he has written like a novel, so that's close, I'm sure.
And so explain to me exactly what your concern is. Are you just upset that you feel like he's making something that's gross and that pancakes are better in a more minimalist approach? Or is it that you're trying to defend the word pancake and that you feel like it's sort of being co-opted into this other, and used to describe this other concoction that your brother came up with?
Yeah, I think more the latter. And, I mean, if the pancake is truly going to be part of, like, the breakfast canon, I think we need to know its place. And, when you have all of these other things on top of it, we're really confusing the traditional breakfast dish of a pancake with something much more dessert-like.
But, I mean, if making it dessert-like is your concern, I mean, you're putting butter and maple syrup on top of it.
Right, and that's a valid argument for sure.
And it does have the word cake in it.
It does have the word cake in it. But by the same token, I feel like a pancake should be something you should be able to grab, even without butter and syrup, and it should still be a delicious thing to have. You could take one even going out the door, and it should still be something you can enjoy.
I don't disagree with that, but does that mean that when you put a lot of things on it and you can't grab it as you're running out the door, that it's no longer a pancake?
Well, let me put it this way. When I see a pancake that's covered with tons of other stuff, the first thing I think to myself is whoever created that pancake is hiding something. I mean, the makers of that pancake were afraid to let the pancake shine because the pancake is faulty in some way.
But see, now we're getting to the heart of the matter here. All right, Matt, because, I asked you a minute ago, Are you upset because you feel protective of the pancake as a food, or because you're worried about the terminology? And you said it was more about terminology, but I can hear in your voice and based on where you end up focusing that actually, I mean, one of the first words you said here in our conversation was the humble pancake. You have a certain feeling of, you feel protective of of the pancake.
But shouldn't we all be protective of these traditional breakfast foods?
I got a few issues with that one sentence, because the fact that it's a traditional breakfast food to me has always kind of been problematic, first
okay.
of all. Like, you know, it's got the word cake in it. It's basically cake. The other thing you said that sort of I struggle with, I just don't get it with pancakes. Like, to me, they're so ordinary. Even a really good pancake doesn't have that much going on. Like, I could name probably 50 bread-based products that I would rather have than a pancake.
Well, I mean, aside from the fact that that's crushing to hear, I think that you are profoundly misguided when you talk about bread-based products. The pancake does have a special place because of its standard shape and because of its fluffy texture that could be lost, you know, were people like my brother able to run rampant over the definition of that food.
Who made the pancakes growing up in your household?
It was kind of a family thing.
And what are some of your memories of pancakes around your house on those Saturday mornings?
A lot of my best memories of my childhood. I mean, you know, we'd have that huge steaming plate of pancakes. You know, we were all sitting around the table. Usually in the weekdays, we're rushing to get somewhere, to school or wherever, so we just grab cereal. And so on Saturday mornings, we had that time. We're all together as a family eating pancakes.
Is it possible that maybe that's why you feel so protective of pancakes, Matt?
Wow, I mean, that... Boy, I hadn't thought of it from that perspective. You may be onto something.
I mean,
you think maybe I'm linking that to my, you know, that lost childhood, if you will, to my love of pancakes.
Something like that. I mean, it strikes me that you have a visceral reaction to protect pancakes, as if an attack on pancakes is an attack on your very upbringing.
Right. You may be right.
And do you have a significant other in your life? Do you have a family?
I do. Yep, I have a wife and a young daughter.
What do you guys do on Saturday mornings?
We often have actually waffles. Hey, it's. I know. It's maybe. My wife's a big fan of waffles, so I do, you know, in the interest of loving her and being supportive of her, I let her choose the breakfast food.
So basically, tradition and family and pancakes meant a lot to you until your wife came into the picture, and then you threw all that out the window and went to waffles.
Well, I still think that I'll be able to establish a bulwark in my daughter's life.
Okay.
I mean, she's only 7 months old at this point,
okay.
So I believe that as she grows up, you know, covertly, I can kind of establish that love, and then we'll outnumber, of course, my wife at some point.
Okay. All right, so Matt, before I let you go, I guess I do need to give you a definitive answer here. I would say, as to you and your brother, you guys are different people, and your approaches to pancakes reflect that. So I think you should accept your brother and his pancakes as they are. As to the question of terminology, I guess this is one of those situations where I think that the word pancakes has two meanings. There's the food pancake and there's the dish pancakes, okay? Now, the food pancake is just pancake batter poured into a pan and cooked, and that is a pancake. And no matter what you put on top of it, that round thing that you took out of a pan will always be a pancake. You can't call it something else. That being said, if you take a pancake and cover it with butter and syrup and peanut butter and jelly and applesauce and fruit, is that still an order of pancakes? Or is that some other concoction in which a pancake is
one component. Where is the line there drawn? Do you want to take a crack at a rule?
I guess I would say if the volume of the what is on top of the pancake exceeds the volume of the pancake or pancakes themselves, then you have something that is no longer a pancake. It's more of a dessert cake or some other dish entirely.
So by that definition, I could take a stack of three pancakes. I could spread butter on top. I could pour syrup on top. I could spread peanut butter and jelly on top, and that would probably still not equal the mass of those three pancakes.
And I'm okay with giving a little ground there. I mean, any way we can get more pancakes on your plate, that's okay with me.
I'll go along with that. And if the percentage of pancake dips below 50%, then, you know, depending on what's on top, you got to decide what you're going to call it.
Right.
Okay. All right, fair enough. Well, Matt in Ohio, thanks so much for the call. Enjoy your pancakes and or waffles.
All right, I appreciate it. Thanks for what you do.
My pleasure. Thank you. Take care.
All right, bye.
Coming up, a husband and wife call in to ask me to settle a cookie-related conflict. My response could save their marriage. Stick around. Welcome back to The Sporkful from WNYC. I'm Dan Pashman. If you're new to this podcast, please subscribe in iTunes or the podcast app or wherever you get your podcasts. That way, you'll never miss an episode. Go ahead, you can just hit that subscribe button right now while I'm talking, and then you're set for life. Great, thanks. Let's get right back to the phones. Hi, who's this?
Hi, this is Chloe from Baltimore, Maryland.
Hey, Chloe, what can I do for you?
So, I am an avid home baker, and I bake for my husband almost weekly, and all from scratch. And we run into a problem that I refer to as the baked good freshness threshold. The thing about Jason is that he would eat a, you know, 3-week-old cookie if given the chance when it's crumbling. And I feel that there is a certain freshness threshold for every baked good.
Right.
And that
I refer to this in my book as the window of optimal consumption.
Yes.
Now, I don't know, like, are you one of those households where, like, you always like to have cookies or brownies or cheesecake or something, like, that you always want a home-baked sweet to be somewhere available?
Yes. I feel like that's part of why Jason married me.
Well, I'm sure that you have many other redeeming qualities. And you said at the very outset, Chloe, that you bake for your husband. Do you also eat these foods?
I do, but I respect the threshold, and he gets frustrated with that.
So you only want them when they're really good, when they're at their best, and Jason eats them when they're not as good.
Yes.
A couple of, like, what seem to me to be sort of very obvious solutions. One is you could just cut your recipes in half.
I never thought about that, and that seems so simple.
But if you cut your recipes in half, it means you're going to have to bake twice as much.
True.
How do you feel about that?
I'm usually open to that, depending on what else is going on in our lives.
All right. I want to delve into this a little bit further. Is Jason there?
He is here.
Okay. Can I talk to him for a minute, please?
Sure.
Okay.
Hi, Dan.
Hey, Jason, how you doing?
I'm good. How are you?
I'm doing well, thank you. So Chloe set up the situation for me, and I want to sort of get a little more information from you. Mm-hmm. When Chloe stops eating whatever batch of baked goods she made for that week after the first or second day, she said that upsets you. Why?
Well, I think that's an exaggeration to say that it upsets me. but I do kind of like question it, you know, like, you know, why would you stop eating these? I should also state that, you know, for the most part, like 9 times out of 10, Chloe doesn't eat any of the stuff that she bakes. Zero. So I am the only person eating it in the house. And so at, you know, in 2 days, like if something disappears because it's reached her threshold for freshness, I find that, you know, particularly problematic because she's not eating those things. I'm eating them. And so should we really be disposing of the baked goods on her perceived threshold of freshness or on my perceived threshold of freshness, since I am the one doing the majority of the consuming?
So when Chloe throws out baked goods that she thinks are stale, but you think are still good, even though you're the only one eating them, why do you think she's doing that?
Well, I mean, you know, her argument is that she only wants me to have the very best, and I get that, but I also don't want to go to waste.
But, like, let's say that Chloe were to cut all her recipes in half and bake twice as often, putting aside for a minute that she's now baking for you twice as often, just in terms of your eating experience, would you like that more, or would there be part of you that would, like, miss the week-old cookies?
I might like that more, but I would also, you know, like I wouldn't, it's a lot of work. We've got an 8-month-old, you know, so she's got her hands full. You know, it's not like this condition in our household that she bakes or something. Just to bake more to keep the baked goods in a smaller window of freshness, I kind of feel like that's ridiculous. But I would eat it, you know, if she bakes them, I'll eat them.
Way to take one for the team, Jason.
Yeah, thanks. It's all I can do, you know, I'm here to service.
Yeah. All right, Jason, can I talk to Chloe again for a minute, please?
Yeah,
all
yeah.
Right.
Hi, Dan.
Hey, Chloe. So it's interesting to me because you bake all this stuff mostly for Jason, and that's like a way that you take care of him and show him love, right?
Sure,
okay.
Yes.
And when you throw away the cookies because you think they're getting stale, you feel like, again, like that you're trying to take care of him. You want only the best for him.
Yes.
I think it's also interesting, though, that Jason feels that by eating stale cookies, which he doesn't mind too much, he's showing love to you.
Yes.
Because he's showing that he appreciates the cookies that you made for him, and he doesn't want to, you know, he doesn't want to throw them out.
Yes.
And yet, in this sort of one specific area of your relationship, the ways in which you're trying to show love to each other are not matching up.
Right. You know, I'm flattered that he would want to eat, you know, a 3-week-old cookie that I've made, that it's still good to him, that he would want to eat it and that he appreciates the work that went into it. But it's also, you know, it's not good. That's not how I intended it to be consumed. So yeah, it's a conflict.
Well, but I think you know, it's probably a not uncommon conflict in a general sense, you know, you are two people you both have good intentions, but you're trying to like sort of take care of each other in the way that the other one doesn't want to be taken care of.
True. Yeah, I never thought about it that way.
So, you know, and that's hard. It's a hard thing, you know. I'll be so curious to see what'll happen when your daughter starts eating cookies.
Me too. Yeah, I'm curious about that too, that if Jason will kind of pass on his, you know, disrespect of the freshness threshold to her.
But I mean, I also wonder about you, Chloe, because I would be a little concerned, like, if one way that you show love to Jason is through your food, which is a way a lot of people express love for people in their families, then it would you probably show love to your daughter in a similar way, right?
Yes, definitely.
And if you only want the best for Jason, you're only going to want the best for your daughter, which is very noble and your heart's in the right place, but I get worried that like you're setting an impossible standard for yourself.
That's true.
I think that, Chloe, you can cut yourself a little more slack.
Okay.
If Jason's happy with the cookies, 4 or 5 days old, go put your feet up.
Great.
wait another day to cook the next batch of cookies, you know?
Great. I think I just needed that permission.
Yes, I think
from someone.
Well, I as a person with no real culinary or psychological experience, I hereby give you that permission.
Thank you.
Well, Chloe, go enjoy some leisure time.
Thank you, Dan.
So, about a week after we recorded that call, I got a package in the mail. And based on the return address in Baltimore, I was pretty sure that it was from a listener. So, I figured it was either someone's lingerie or anthrax. Turns out, it was cookies from Chloe. She sent brown butter, white chocolate, and grapefruit cookies. That's one kind of cookie, with brown butter, white chocolate, and grapefruit inside. They were great. Just like a little bit of tart. So good. But the cookies that stole our hearts were Chloe's Old Bay corn cookies. They were sweet and salty, buttery and peppery, just amazing. She says she adapted the recipe for corn cookies from the Mama Fuku Milk Bar cookbook, and she added the Old Bay because it's literally illegal to cook anything within Baltimore city limits without putting Old Bay on it. And Chloe was nice enough to share the recipe for her Old Bay corn cookies, so we'll put that in the blog post for this episode at sporkful.com. As I said at the top of the show, big Sporkful live event at the Bell House in Brooklyn coming up. The great John Hodgman and I will debate whether hot dogs are sandwiches. Comedian Joe Firestone will join me to present a special food-related edition of her live event, Punderdome 3000. And I'll talk to the husband and wife teams behind the Good Fork restaurant and the Chipper Truck about what it's like to open and run a restaurant with your spouse. Plus, we'll have food trucks and a signature cocktail designed by yours truly. It's going to be an extravaganza. You got to be there. Tuesday, November 10th, tickets are on sale now, and they're going fast. So get yours at thebellhouseny.com. Please subscribe to this podcast in iTunes or the podcast app or wherever you get your podcasts so you never miss an episode. This show is a production of WNYC and The Sporkful. It's produced by Ann Sani and me. Our engineer is Irene Trudell. We get help from Tim Ruggieri. Special thanks to Paula Schumann. Until next time, I'm Dan Pashman.
Hi, this is Amy from Austin, Texas, reminding you to eat more, eat better, and eat more better.